evening. I'm K2 Romeo India Whiskey, along with Mel, K2 Kilo Echo Yankee. We run a thing called the Technical Net. And the main purpose of the Technical Net is education. The clan gathers on Sunday nights, and the various members of the ham radio fraternity help each other. We try to explain how ham radio hardware works, how to make it work better, how to get more enjoyment out of it. We introduce people to a number of the 27 different kinds of ham radio. 2-meter repeater ham radio is just one of the 27 kinds. I guess you could say FM repeater ham radio is one of the 27 kinds. There's 26 other kinds, so if for some reason you become disappointed with this one, try one of the other 26. The subjects that are discussed on the Technical Net, with rare exception, are the questions that you ask your show to some degree. Occasionally, Mel will have a prepared program on some particular subject of common interest, like how do decibels work, how does the Smith chart work, how do you do impedance matching, things like that. But for the most part, the subjects that are discussed are what you bring to the TechNet. For those who desire, there are ways of listening to the TechNet when you're on the road, when you're away from home, by way of EchoLink, by way of VoIP. And there are people, I was told, coming home from Dayton who recorded various programs from the Technical Net by going to the website amateurradio.tv, and the last few years of TechNet, every hour, every minute of every Sunday for the last few years, is there recorded. And most of them are documented as to what subject is being discussed during each chunk of time. So if you're a TechNet enthusiast and you want to listen to past programs or live programs, there's multiple ways of doing it. Andy, WA2CDL, and Eric, KE2EJ, have assembled quite a bit of hardware so that people that are pretty far away from home, there are people from far away as...
Repeater, timeout.
There are people as far away as California and Texas, among other places, who have signed into the TechNet live and asked their questions. That portion of the system is a little bit troublesome. We have to allow the repeater to drop for a long period of time for them to get through. But that's being worked on. So, a person signs into the TechNet by giving Mel and Dick your call letters, your name, and the word yes, which means you do have a question or a comment for the net. A typical sign-in would sound like WS2N, Paul, and yes. Do we have any check-ins? Give me your call letters and name at this time.
2EL, Rich, and yes.
2TTT, yes. Good score.
KI4,
Major OIY, Joe, yes.
Yes.
Alpha Charlie 2, Alpha Echo, no.
WS2N, Paul, with a Hubble update.
KC2, MDP, Steve, no questions at this time.
Good evening all, K2, KEY.
Okay. So far we picked up Rich, Joe, Mel, Gordon, Paul, and Steve, and some other names, but among those who said yes, those are the ones for sure. Gordon's had an email question he's asked people recently. Apparently he wasn't happy with the answer, and now he's going to ask here. So we'll see. Anyone else to sign in, particularly if you've got a question or a comment, a real yes, give me your call letters and name at this time.
KI4NIL, Frank, yes.
Frank recognized. Anyone else?
Kilo Charlie 2, Tango Delta Lima, name is John.
And I'm going to assume John has got a yes. All right, we've got more than enough. Rich, N2EO, what's the latest in Whitestone, New York? And is Jingles happy in listening to the TechNet tonight? You got it, Rich.
Okay, Dick, Jingles is outside right now. He wanted to go out. He said meow. Dick, I sound okay. I set the deviation on this rig before I go on until we out.
You sound loud and clear. Go right ahead.
Okay, Dick, we have a little extra pause there. Yeah, I'm finishing up on that rubidium standard. I got it working, as you know. I sent you a worksheet. I sent it to Mel. I sent it to Glenn of what I found. And I want to thank Howard, WB2HWW. You were helpful, and Howard was helpful. That 2, I thought it was 2 times 10 to the 32. That's what was screwing me up, Dick. It's 2, but on the computer they use the caret character with 32, which means 2 to the 32nd power. So that's what messed me up. Howard HWW straightened me out on that. And right after that, I got everything running. Nick, without going into the whole numbers, you said you had done some, my Hewlett Packard 48, he did some rounding off that the unit could be put into the double precision mode. I don't know if you want to do that now, it's up to you. But I went over the numbers, calculator came out with the number that you convert to hex, came out with 854-633-878. It rounded it off to, but the actual number is 854-633-876.167. I wonder if that's what you got, what you were referring to this week about that Everdeck. RIW TechNet and 2EO.
Yeah, I don't have those numbers in front of me right now, Rich. And by the way, 2 to the 32 power is 4 and a fraction billion, a really big integer number. And 2 times 32 is something a hell of a lot smaller. That'll make a very big difference. And I think the equation for calculating the right number that you eventually convert to hexadecimal in order to enter it as a serial word into your rubidium standards in order to tell it to go to the right output frequency. By putting it as 2 to the 32 power, which is sort of a binary, it is a binary number, when you use the machine correctly, you will get essentially no round off. Many handheld calculators and computers, desktop computers, have something called the double precision mode, which can be commanded instead of doing calculations at 8, 10, or 12 decimal places of accuracy. It'll do it with roughly twice those number of digits. The handheld calculators called HP 48, 49, and 50 don't do it as double precision. In the modes where you can select octal, binary, decimal, and hexadecimal, it doesn't do double precision. It does something called word size, recall word size, or set word size. The machine wakes up in the word size 64. So the machine wakes up knowing it's going to take 64 ciphers, 64 characters, if my understanding is correct. So that's an extremely high precision by my standards. But you have to make sure that you use the machine correctly. In other words, you take your number and the first 12 decimals of your calculated decimal number, to my knowledge, there's no easy way. Oh, yes, there is. If you convert things to integer, and as a way of asking the machine to convert your input numbers to integers, and then do the calculations in integers, to my knowledge, integers are done with 64 characters of accuracy, as is the conversions to
repeater. Time out.
As is the conversion for various base sizes, octal, hex, and decimal. So once you use the base conversion with the crosshatch in front, once you use integers, I think the machine stays in 64 places of accuracy. And so when you read your manuals, when you do a little bit of searching, that's what you're looking for. I own the full set of manuals for the series HP 48, 49, and 50. There's two manuals that are 8.5 by 11 by an inch thick, and two of them that are roughly 5 by 7 in an inch thick. A total of 4 manuals. If you really want the full set of information on what these machines can do, that's the good news. The bad news is the machines, the manuals cost, I think, something like $80 a set. I forget what the number was. My son bought them for me. And they're not written in as user-friendly a form as some of the previous Hewlett-Packard manuals. The data is all there, but you got to do some searching. And they're not quite as pretty. So powerful machines, properly used, you will get the right answer. So sounds like you're getting very close. The difference that I thought I saw was only in the last two least significant bits, which I think is going to make some number of millihertz of error, if I was correct, in your 10 megacycle output desired. And eventually, as you start doing some checking with either the recalculation in the integer mode or by way of comparison with global positioning satellite or some other reference traceable to the Bureau or traceable to a broadcast station that's using a cesium standard, you'll eventually find out whether or not you do have this millihertz of error that I'm suspicious of. Other than that, I think you're making progress, and looks like you're going to be the local Bureau of Standards here as far as frequency accuracy goes, eventually, Rich. N2EO for any further comments. K2RIW in the TechNet.
Okay, Dick, really good. Really good. You know, the thing can be programmed and reprogrammed, so there's no problem there. It doesn't have to be done right now. But I did order a nice Hammond box to put it in, the parts for a power supply. Probably overkill, but I'm going to use a 2N3055 and reference it with an LM317 because it doesn't draw that much current. I mean, it draws about 2 amps on warm-up. And we'll make it real nice, put a BMC on the front, and make it look like a commercial product. And then later on down the road, I have a connector on there, so if I have to hook a computer back up to it and reprogram it, like you say, in the integer mode, that would be something I could do at a later date. So, Dick, let me turn it back to you. I guess you can go on to the next customer. A2RIW, TechNet Limark, and 2EO.
Alrighty, I think the next person who signed in with a real question or comment was Joe, W2RYY. Go right ahead, Joe.
Good evening, Dick, K2RIW, W2RYY. I have a question on measuring, I guess, repeater system sensitivity. Maybe I've asked a variation of this question before, but I'll go over it again just with the information I have. You tell me if, what you think is either right or wrong in it. Put a signal generator through the repeater through the antenna connection, which means it's going through the duplexer, pre-selected filter, preamp, and everything, and I get a reading of minus 122 for 12 dB sine ad. Got that so far?
I know about the minus 122, and you and I can easily convert that into microvolts. Please proceed.
I then put a signal in from another antenna located on the same location where the repeater is, one of my other antennas. I had to turn up the generator to minus 60 dBm to get the same amount of SINAD reading on the repeater. Got that so far?
Whoa. Wait a minute here. That is 62 decibels of desensitization. Now, if I understand you correctly, you're connected to the first antenna, and with one of these little bug-like sampling devices, you calibrated it, and you're injecting a signal that once you do the calculation, it turned out to be a sensitivity of minus 122, or you went directly in from a signal generator with pads. So by one means or another, you're connected to either a dummy load or antenna number one, and you measure sensitivity of minus 122, which sounds extremely good. Let me think what that means. Minus 107 is a microvolt. 122 is 14, 15 dB better than a microvolt. That's a nice small number of microvolts, 0.05 or something like that. We'll eventually figure that one out. then when you connected to antenna number two or an antenna, I'm not sure which, and you repeated the sensitivity measurement, after calibrating for your method of injecting the signal, I presume it is the receiver port reference of minus 60, which is 62 decibels less sensitive. If you lost 2 dB of sensitivity, I've got some explanation. If you lost 62 dB of sensitivity, boy, to lose that much, there's either a kilowatt transmitter a few hundred feet away, or there is an open cable somewhere. That's a huge difference. I mean, wow. You've used dynamite to kill a fly here. Something really terrible is going on. So I'm having trouble swallowing that number, but go ahead, try to go beyond if you want to. You got it, Joe.
Probably because you didn't listen to exactly what I told you I did. The first test I did was I put a signal into the antenna input of the repeater, took the antenna cable off, and put a signal generator in place of that connection, and I got a reading of minus 122 dBm for 12 dB of SINAD. And I put that antenna cable back where it went. I put the signal generator into another antenna on the same location, one of my other antennas, and put a signal into that antenna, and I had to turn up a generator to minus 60 dBm to achieve the same reading on the repeater receiver. Do you understand that so far?
Okay, and I did misread you the first time. There's still a problem. Most people, when they measure sensitivity, want to eventually measure the sensitivity with the transmitter of the repeater operational. In your first test, when you measured the 122 and you went straight in, obviously the transmitter was not turned on, because if it was, and it turned on its transmitting power and roared, let's say, 50 watts back into your signal generator, that can do some damage. So you didn't say, but I presume the transmitter was turned off, or it was some kind of a very protected signal generator. Back to you, Joe.
The transmitter was not turned on in either test. The transmitter is not part of this equation here. Wasn't measuring transmit and descent. I was trying to measure my basic sensitivity. Now looking at the third figure. After I put the minus 60 in and got that reading, I put the analyzer, the other half of the analyzer, because it can run duplex, it can generate out of the same frequency as it's capable of looking at on the air. We're all set at zero. It took a minus 25 signal, minus 25 dBm signal from the generator to give me a minus 70 on the generator's analyzer when I looked at the output of the preamp that feeds the receiver. Okay, so that told me my path loss from the signal going up to the antenna, going across the other antenna, coming down, going through everything else, going through the preamp, was 45 decibels difference. You understand that?
Yes, I do. Please proceed.
So if my theoretical path loss between antenna A to antenna B going backwards, just like you'd be testing the thing on the air live without any directional couplers or signal taps or anything else, I had a differential of 45 decibels. So if I put a signal in of minus 60 to give me 12 dB SINAD, if you work that backwards and subtract 45 decibels, now I'm down to minus 105. Something doesn't quite sound right.
Yeah, by using your reference point out of the preamp, in my opinion, you've created a problem. Because when you did the first reading, you were not injecting the signal into the output of the preamp. Either the preamp wasn't there, or you were injecting a signal into the input of the preamp. So you've moved the reference point, and I haven't heard you yet tell me the number of decibels gain of the preamp, and therefore a method by which you can recalculate for the movement of the reference point. I guess you got to first tell me, why did you move the reference point? Back to you, Joe.
Well, part of the problem is here, you are assuming things of things I've done. You're assuming something. And unless I tell you I did it, I didn't do it. The gain of the preamp happens to be about 15 decibels, approximately. When I tested the repeater initially, the sensitivity of the repeater, I tested it by putting a signal into the way the antenna connects to my outside antenna. That's a, you know, a bulkhead connector on top of the cabin. And it took a minus 122 to give me 12 dB sine net. That means the signal is going through my duplexer, through a pre-selected filter, through the preamp, and into the receiver, and producing that level of signal quality. Okay? The second test was putting the repeater back to normal with its hooked to its normal omnidirectional antenna, and I put a signal in for another antenna on the same location, not far away from my first antenna. And it took me a minus 60 to give me the same 12 dB sine net reading on the repeater receiver. Both tests were done with the transmitter off. So I had to know what my path loss was between point to point feeding into the receiver. So being that the analyzer can't really read down at minus 105 very easily, I put a larger signal in to see something that the analyzer could easily detect correctly. It took a minus 25 signal off the generator, put it in antenna number 2 to give me a minus 70 on the up. Is there a problem here?
I've heard nothing from you for 40 seconds until you said, is there a problem here? Joe, if you're there, we're not hearing you at this time.
That's because I'm not transmitting.
We waited for you to pass it over. We heard 40 seconds worth of silence, and then you said, is there a problem here? You were in the middle of a conversation which abruptly stopped before you came to any kind of a conclusion, question, or whatever. You may have to repeat the last two sentences. Go ahead.
Okay, what part of the conversation did you miss?
Rather than that, when you did the first experiment and you measured minus 122, you were going into the antenna port of a duplexing filter. The output of the duplexing filter was going through a preamp, out of the receiver port of the duplexer, through a preamp, into the rest of your receiver. So the minus 122 is reference to the input port of your duplexer, which I could call the output port of your normal antenna. That is your reference point. Then you put your signal generator at a minus 60 dBm into antenna number 2. You didn't measure the signal level that came out of the first antenna. You measured the signal level out of the first antenna through a preamp. You've moved the reference point. You don't seem to accept me saying that, but tell me why you didn't move, why I can't say you moved the reference point. The reference point, I would have done the measurement by putting the signal generator into antenna number 2, measure the signal level that comes out of antenna number 1, because that is the apparent location, so to speak, that you get the first measurement of minus 122. By putting in the preamp, or a preamp, even if it's not the same one or it's a different one, doesn't matter, by putting in a preamp, you've added another gain stage. You changed noise figure, you moved a reference point. Maybe you disagree with me, but I think you moved a reference point. Back to you, Joe.
I only disconnected the preamp once to be able to determine the path loss between antenna 2, back through antenna 1, through the duplexer, through the preselector, through the preamp. That's why I did that.
Dick? I wouldn't do it that way. Let's see what Eric would do. Go ahead, Eric.
All right, here's what you're not getting. All right, he's measuring the sensitivity of his receiving system, okay? Then he's deciding to see how much energy it takes to put into one antenna, to then act like a piece of wire and connect the other antenna,
and give him the same results, and that's where the big difference in level is. Okay, so he's trying to take, let's just for the sake of it say, we're going to take 1 volt of signal and dump it into an antenna, and expect that 1 volt of signal is going to come out of the second antenna that's mutually conductive, coupled to it. And he's basically using his receiver, so he's got the receive sensitivity of 122 dBm. And then in this whole process, he loses his, whatever it was, 65 dBm. Which is not really, it's really what he's trying to do is say, let me stick a volt into antenna 1 and hope and pray that a volt comes out of antenna 2. And that's not going to happen.
Okay. I started off being alarmed by the 60 dB of delta. I'm no longer alarmed by that one, Eric. You may have lost some of the conversation in between. When he put a signal generator into the second antenna, which has some coupling coefficient to the first antenna, to measure the coupling coefficient between the antennas, you are saying, and I am saying, is a valid measurement. However, during the time he wanted to measure the coupling coefficient between the antennas, he threw a preamp into the network. Does that confuse you? It confuses me. Over to you, Eric.
Stop looking at the preamp as a separate part of the whole system. The preamp's in there when he made his first measurement of the repeater system. It's part of it. It just so happens that he used the output of the preamp to measure a voltage that was going into the receiver. Okay, what he should have said was is that when I put 122 dBm, I get 12 dB sine it, I get whatever the level is coming out of the preamp to give me that 12 dB sine it. What he should have done is not mention the preamp at all. And nobody would have been confused.
Not what I...
Joe, go ahead and give us your explanation.
That's kind of why I'm asking a question over here, so I can get an explanation of what I measured and why the level seemed to be such a high level from measuring the repeater sensitivity directly compared to an off-the-ear type of signal. The only way to measure an off-the-ear signal is to know how much you're putting in for one point and how much arrives at the other point. And the differential is your path loss. If I didn't know that, and I just said, I can hear somebody at 10 miles away or 5 miles away, how would I know how many microvolts are coming into my repeater at?
Okay, Joe, let me ask you a series of questions that'll help clear this up. When you measured minus 122, I think you were going to the antenna port of a duplexer. Am I correct so far?
Yes, you are correct.
Okay, the antenna port of the duplexer, that signal wanders through the duplexing filters, comes out of the receiver port of the duplexer, goes through a preamplifier, then goes into the receiver. You did not tell us during the minus 122 experiment what signal level comes out of that preamp. Is that true?
Bro, you got it wrong. I'll tell you again. The signal goes into the antenna port of the duplexer. The duplexer has three ports, transmit, receive, and antenna. I put a signal into the antenna port of the duplexer. On the receive frequency of the receiver port, it comes out of there and goes to a narrow band pass filter because the duplexes by themselves do not have a great deal of RF selectivity. The preselector gives me about a 1-2 meg bandwidth into the preamp. It helps greatly keeping out of band RF from overloading the preamp. So it goes from antenna input on the duplexer to receiver port of the duplexer to preselector input, preselector output, preamp, and then receiver. Okay, that's how the configuration is. I put a minus 122 in at the duplexer input where the antenna would go, and out of the other end, I measure 12 dB sine ed with a signal of minus 122. That's what I was doing. And when I put a signal in from the second antenna, I connected the repeater antenna back to the repeater the way it normally is. For me to put a signal in from some other source and hear that on my receiver, I would have to know the path laws between point to point, otherwise my test would be meaningless. And I put a minus 60 in to get 12 dB sine at. To actually know what that path laws...
Joe,
I had to put a much higher signal in off the generator so I could read it correctly on the analyzer, because the analyzer does not go down to minus 105 very easily, or minus 100. It doesn't want to do that. So I put a minus 25 into the second antenna. I got a minus 70 out of the preamplifier connection to the receiver. I took the receiver off, put the spectrum analyzer into the output of the preamp, and it registered to minus 70. So I knew what my path loss was, 45 decibels. Do you understand that so far?
Yes, I think I do. Go ahead.
Okay, so that's a constant, and the signal didn't change between antenna 1 to antenna 2. So now I have a constant. If I put a signal in one antenna, it's going to arrive at the other antenna by mutual conduction, going down the antenna, going through the duplexer, going through the bandpass filter, going through the preamp, getting amplified, and being produced at some level coming out of the preamp. From point A to point B, namely antenna 2, going all the way back to antenna 1, coming out of the preamp, I had a differential of 45 decibels. Okay? So, now that I know what my differential is, if I put a minus 60 in, it would give me 12 dB of SINAD in the repeater receiver. Subtracting the 45 decibel differential, now it makes me think that I'm putting a signal in actually into the antenna input of the duplexer of minus 105. A little different than measuring directly on the repeater input. And that's what I'm trying to determine, why I'm getting such a higher amount of differential. It's like over a microvolt. It's just a little hard to believe something is that insensitive.
Yeah, I see the nature of your concern. Do you have enough signal generator power output capability to plug the antenna into, plug the signal into antenna number 2 and read the signal level directly that comes out of antenna number 1? Can you make an antenna to antenna insertion loss measurement? Do you have enough signal generator stooge to be able to do that? Back to you, Joe.
I probably could have done that, but what's the point of doing that? It's coming into, if the signal is being generated, say I put 0 dBm into antenna number 2, and it arrives at antenna number 1 by the virtue of path loss at some lower level, minus 30, minus 40, whatever it's going to be, whatever, maybe minus 50, minus 60. It's going to the duplexer, going to the preamp of the bandpass filter, and then getting amplified by the preamp. So I'm doing the same thing of what you're telling me to do, except I'm just skipping a step by not having to disconnect the preamp again.
E2HWW with a comment.
I hear you, Howie. In order to do the antenna-to-antenna insertion loss, you said you connected the preamp. You skipped a whole lot of words. When you said you connected the preamp, you really meant that antenna, number 1, went through duplexer, out of receiver port of duplexer, through bandpass filter, through preamp, into your measuring device. Had you told me what was the signal level coming out of the preamp during the minus 122 measurement, then I would have had a direct point of reference. You're doing indirect reference by changing the configuration. You didn't measure the output signal of the preamp during the minus 122 measurement. You did do it out of the preamp during the signal into the second antenna measurement. So it's not quite as kosher as it could have been. Let's see what Howie thinks about this. You got it, Howie.
Absolutely right, Dick. The only other thing is the preamp linear? You're going to an amplifier, and you have any compression, you really have to go from cabinet to cabinet. Then you don't have a true reference point. You have to measure it. You would actually have to somehow put enough signal in to know what's coming in at the bulkhead connector on the repeater cabinet. If you go downstream, then you got to look at the linearity of the system, Dick.
Is that the point, Howie? I don't think that troubled him in this case. Where he's calculating some kind of a signal strength of either minus 122 or 105 going into the antenna port of the duplexer. That kind of signal level can't possibly overload any reasonable preamp. So overload of the preamp by some other crazy signal, yes. But by what he was doing, I doubt it highly. I know you're going to disagree with what I'm going to say, Joe. Try not to get angry at me. Had you decided that the point of reference is the antenna connector of the duplexing filter, that's where you made your first measurement of minus 122. That has to be, in my opinion, your point of reference, because in the first measurement of the minus 122, you did not tell me what signal level was coming out of the preamp. And maybe you couldn't. Maybe it's too weak and you can't easily make that measurement. I accept that. So, you made a minus 122 at the input port of the duplexer. If in the second measurement you made the output from the antenna number one, which normally goes to that input port, yes, you'll have to crank up the signal generator some more. But now you're injecting the signal into antenna number two. Measure the signal level coming out of antenna number one. The output signal of antenna number one normally goes into the input port of the duplexer, where you had connected your minus 122 signal. In my mind, that is your true point of reference. You have to keep that point of reference, otherwise you do run into some conversion difficulties, intermod difficulties, a number of other difficulties. If you repeat the measurement in that manner, I think you're going to get a brand new set of data that I predict will make a little more sense. I think you're going to disagree with me, but that's my opinion. Over to you, Joe. K2RIW over to WA2RYY.
Well, I actually do disagree with you, because I believe the method that I use tells me the signal level differential between point to point, and I don't understand why that's a problem doing it that way. I'm just trying to understand why the apparent effect of a sensitivity repeater on the air, listening to it on the air connected to an outside antenna, seems to be so high. It's higher than a microvolt, and I just don't think I have that kind of noise for it. The problem is trying to measure with a piece of test equipment like I'm measuring, using as a instrumentation. The spectrum analyzer portion of the equipment cannot go down to minus 122. It can't possibly see that. You're like 10 or 15 dB below the noise floor of the instrument, so it can't possibly measure that. That's why I'm using the receiver as a measuring device to first initially tell me what my 12 dB sign at level is. And by putting a signal out from just like you'd listen to a signal out of a repeater. Somebody's got a 10-watt handy to a 5-watt handy talkie, and they're 3 miles away from the repeater, and they're not making it, or they're making it. How are you going to tell how many microvolts are coming into the antenna unless you knew the signal level they're producing and the path loss from point to point? All right? I knew one of the things. I knew the measurement, the signal level I was putting into antenna number two, and I knew the path loss because I measured the path loss. So I knew two of the parts of the equation.
Okay, Joe. I'm going to use one of your quotes. You didn't listen to me. When I wanted you to measure the insertion loss between the two antennas, I didn't want you to do that at minus 122. I wanted you to do that at, let me pick a number, 0 dBm. You're going to plug 0 dBm into the second antenna. Measure the amount of signal level that comes out of the first antenna. I only want to know decibels of insertion loss antenna to antenna. The signal level at which you measure that shouldn't matter. Whether you measure the decibel levels at minus 122, if you had the ability, or whether you measure it at 0 dBm in the second antenna, it doesn't matter. I just want to know the decibels of insertion loss between the antennas at any power level you can measure it at. If you do that measurement and then compare the results, it is my prediction you're going to get something much more reasonable in calculated signal level of minus dBms into your receiver. And then the next question will be, what went wrong with the first method of measurement? So does that make some sense, Joe? Do the insertion loss between the two antennas directly at any power level is convenient for your instrumentation. W2RYY, K2RYW.
KI4NIL, real quick.
Let Joe go first. Go ahead, Joe.
I was trying to save a couple of steps of measuring by measuring a signal coming from one antenna going to the other and looking at the output like in a loop, okay? If you put something in one antenna, it goes through free space into the other antenna, comes down the antenna, goes through all the filtering, goes through the preamp, and you get something produced at the output of the preamp. I measured the difference between point A and point B. What's so difficult about that to understand?
Okay, KI4NIO, you wanted to make a comment? Go right ahead.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt, but I've got to get going. You guys didn't do anything wrong. I just, it's getting late, it's Sunday night, and I've got to get running, so I've got to get going. So I will check in with you guys next week. 73, KI4NIL.
Okay, yeah, sorry about that. Yeah, you were downrange in the list, and didn't get to you in time. To answer your question, Joe, we want to know decibels between the antennas, not decibels to some point downrange in the receiver system, because that downrange point, which you used in the second measurement, although it was present in the first measurement, it didn't tell me the signal level there. And maybe you couldn't, and I understand that. I know you don't agree with me, but I call it a movement of the point of reference. And that makes a complication as making things seem erroneous at first. KE2EJ has made a lot of repeater measurements for sensitivity. Maybe I'm being too much of a stickler here, but do you see my difficulty on this one, Eric? KE2EJ, K2RIW.
To HWW with a comment for Dick.
Go ahead, Joe. I mean, go ahead, Howie.
Absolutely correct. He can't go all the way back because he wants to know what the sensitivity is at the... He wants to know the real sensitivity of the repeater at the top of the cabinet, not through the whole loop system. If he does it at the preamp, he's going to find out that he has sensitivity of a half a microvolt, whatever the receiver is. He's looking at the RF coming at the point where the receiver is. He wants to look at the RF or the sensitivity at the top of the system where it goes into the bulkhead connector. You're right. He moves the reference point from the top of the cabinet to the bottom of the cabinet. He has to measure the sensitivity at the same place.
Yeah, I think Howie is somewhat agreeing with me, Joe. Joe, how difficult would it be to repeat the measurement where you antenna to antenna at any power level measure decibels of insertion loss between the antennas? How difficult is that to do, Joe?
Well, it's difficult to point. I got to drag all my test equipment back up to repeater location and open up the lines to do the same thing again. That's how difficult it is. That's why I did it this way. And, you know, copy down the information of what it did from point to point.
Was I correct in guessing that you didn't have the ability to measure the signal level at the preamp output during the minus 122 measurement, that the signal level there would have been too weak for whatever instrumentation you had with you? Is that true?
Yes, I said that like three times already. I'm using an IFR 1500 service monitor, which has a spectrum analyzer built in. It can generate, it can receive, it can use a spectrum analyzer all at the same time, because it actually has multiple functions of this piece of test equipment, okay? The spectrum analyzer cannot go down to minus 110, 120, 130. Cannot possibly do that. The best you're going to see of that thing is maybe minus 100. That you're going to be able to get any kind of image out of that you can say, yes, that's probably what I'm looking at. Anything below that is completely useless to try to look at. You're looking at the noise floor of the instrument. So that's why I didn't try to measure something that far low. And if I measure the antenna, the difference in path loss between antenna 1 and antenna 2, and I got a certain number, I'm going to have to subtract the loss going through my duplexer, subtract the loss of my bandpass filter, then add the gain of my preamp. So I skipped all those steps by doing what I told you I did. I put a signal in, and look what I got out of the preamp at the other end. I don't understand why that's so difficult to understand what I did.
Go ahead, Eric.
You're making something that's not complicated. Sounds really complicated, but it's not complicated. Think of it as a black box. Just when you put minus 122 in it,
it gives you no noise. Anything less than minus 122 gives you noise. Okay, so that's the point where noise is. So remember, all right, hook a piece of wire to an antenna, point it at another antenna, hook a piece of wire to that antenna, and keep injecting a signal into the second antenna until you don't get any noise out of the receiver. Now he's measuring whatever the difference is between the input connector of that black box, and included in that path is two antennas. So when he feeds minus 60 into the second antenna, it gets coupled to the first antenna, it winds up being minus 122 where it goes into the black box. Very simple.
Now, we're off on a tangent, Eric. You and I are. I'm not contesting this. I'm not disagreeing with the fact that measuring the minus 122 going into his port, his antenna port, coming out of the preamp is too weak for him to measure. I accept that. Let me reword this. Joe, if you measured minus 122 at the top of the cabinet, to put it in Howie's words, then if you had followed my advice, which you didn't have then, and measured directly antenna to antenna insertion loss at the 0 dBm level, you put 0 dBm into antenna number 2 and measure minus 60 coming out of antenna number 1. That means the coupling coefficient between the two antennas is 60 dB. If then when you put minus 60 into antenna number 2 and you measure SINAD and you get it, 60 and 60 would be minus 120 dB of apparent sensitivity. You simply add the decibels of insertion loss to the antenna, or subtract the insertion loss in decibels between the antennas from the second measurement, which was minus 60 out of the signal generator. It's an extremely simple one-step decibel subtraction. And now the repeater is used in the exact same configuration in both cases. You're measuring SINAD out of it, and you're not opening up any of its connectors. You open up a connector on the output of a preamp of a receiver chain. You're assuming that everything was 50 ohms at that point. It might not have been. The way the preamp was insertion loss, the way the preamp was met to the receiver system, when the preamp is connected to the receiver, is not the same as when the preamp goes into 50 ohm instrumentation. That's one of the variables you made, which I disagree with. I don't think we're going to be able to resolve the decibels of error that you're found. With the raw data we've got, I don't think we're going to find it tonight, and I think I've got to go on to the next questioner, Joe, and I know you're going to be unhappy with this one. Have you HULYY for any other comment? HULYW.
Well, Eric seemed to understand what I was trying to do, and I just, with understanding that, the basic idea of what I was trying to do, I'm trying to determine the effective sensitivity of the repeater receiver at the location. You know, anybody can take a signal generator, put it into a repeater, and say, yeah, I got a repeater that hears that at 0.25 for 20 dB aquatic. Fine. Hook it up in the real world and then see what you actually hear coming in. You might find something completely different. Apparently, that's what I apparently have found. And I'm trying to understand why, because apparently it makes my repeater seem like it's about minus 105, hearing the same amount of 12 dB SINAD, and it doesn't seem to really calculate to it terribly well. I understand what you are saying about the pluses and minuses and measuring the antenna more from point to point. I'm still going to end up doing the same thing by disconnecting all this stuff, putting a strong enough signal in, and then I have to subtract the decibel loss of the duplexer, the decibel loss of the preselector, and then add the gain to the preamp. So I skipped a couple of steps by leaving all that stuff back in the chain and measuring the output of the preamp. You know what? Drop and go to the next guy.
You got a question here, Dick. I might be able to solve this very easily, Dick.
Okay, go ahead, try, Howie.
Mr. Charles, you know the exact output coming out of your cabinet. You know the exact output there. Then you could take your service monitor, sit, you know, anywhere you want to, read the off-the-air DBs and work backwards. If you know the precise output at the cabinet, and I probably assume you measured it into a dummy load, if you know the exact output coming out of the cabinet, Dick, you could work it backwards. Go ahead.
I don't understand your question, Howie. When you say output of the cabinet, his cabinet only has an output when it's transmitting, and he wasn't transmitting, so I'm confused. Go ahead.
No. Look, if he knows the output of the repeater, the repeater is on. Let's say the repeater is putting out 100 watts. That's what comes out of your cabinet, okay? That's 50 dBm. Then he measures the signal on his service monitor with his rubber duck on the service monitor at some location. He knows what he's seeing off the air. He subtracts the difference. Then he turns up this generator. You understand what I'm saying, Dick?
I hear the concept, but you've used the wrong word. He's got a suggestion here, Howie. I mean, Joe, that's a little bit easier. If you know the power output of your transmitter, and that's going into antenna number one, then you measure the amount of signal level present at antenna number two, used as a receiver. Because of the law of reciprocity, it doesn't matter which way the signal flows. The insertion loss between the two antennas is the same. Then you can measure the insertion loss between the two antennas. The only slight error with this technique is that if it was at 2 meters, there's 600 kc of offset, or if it's at 450, there's 5 megacycles of offset. And that will change the insertion loss between the antennas. I know we've dwelled on this one a little bit too long, and we've got to come back to it next time, Joe. Sorry about that. The next person on the list was Gordon, W2TTT. And if we haven't put you to sleep, Gordon, with your question. W2TTT, K2RIW. Gordon, you were there 50% of the time. We heard the rock. We heard the word Yagi. We heard 902. And I wish I was good enough in memory to remember what you had on your recent email, which I'm looking up right now. Okay. This is with reference to, 70 megacycles. Your question you asked to the microwave reflector people was, since the digital television era is coming up, and essentially all channel 2 to 6 signals are going to go away, should we amateurs be applying for a license allocation or capability to use 70 megacycles? Many European amateurs have a 70 megacycle ham band, and I think you're asking the question, should we be asking for a 70 megacycle allocation in the United States? Is that your question, Joe? I mean, Gordon, W2TTT, K2RIW?
Well, it could be. I had two, but that's fine. Let's go with that one. And the other question, which I'll also give, because I may not be able to get back into the repeater, is 6-foot dish. I had to make it a grid dish if necessary to lighten up on the load, and bird bath to think if I really need to. But 903 and 1296, like they do over at SZ. I got some really nice comments from K2LNS. Say you got to tear your tower apart, which I think is pretty funny, actually. So I was actually thinking of perhaps mounting it on a hazer so I could bring it down below the house line for normal storage. That's another alternative to bird bathing. Anyway, those are my two questions, yes.
Okay, you never used the word what frequency you're using the six-foot dish. You never told us. In your original question, I vaguely remember you were going to use the 6-foot dish at 10 gigahertz, and I strongly do not recommend that. Yes, I'll admit that the guys up at W2SZ do use a 6-foot dish at 10 gigs, but that's after a whole lot of experience of using a smaller dish at 10 gigs. Is it 10 gigs you intend to use the 6-foot dish on and mount it on a tower? And if so, I'm going to try to talk you out of that. I may be misinterpreting the question. Over to you, Gordon.
Frequencies are 903 and 1296, and there were two possible applications. One is home, where I could put it on a hazer or bird bath, the thing. The other one is in a portable installation where I could, you know, just, you know, if it becomes a wind issue, I could just tilt it over and get it out of the wind's way before it becomes catastrophic. That's not a big deal. But my question is, at those two frequencies, you know, versus a loop Yagi, what are the pluses and minuses of each? I mean, they're using just a splash, a splash sheet with a dipole on those two bands with a 6-foot dish, and I'm kind of amazed, given some of the care that they do on other bands. So what's up with that? So, and they do really well. And part of it is the sight, obviously, Greylock, but I'm just kind of curious. You know, talk to me. Give me some pluses and minuses. I'm not afraid of the dish. But, you know, talk to me. And yes, the other question was a 4-meter allocation at 70 to 70.5 or some fraction thereof. Wouldn't that be cool? W2TTT.
Yeah, let's just take only the question about the dish. Now that I think you're going to use the dish at 902 and 1296 megacycles, a 6-foot dish can work very nicely there. An equal number of decibels of gain out of Yagis on 902 compared to a 6-foot dish, my gut feel is you're going to end up with a hell of a lot less wind load with the Yagis, but it's a much more complicated arrangement of a lot of parasitic elements, a big power divider assembly for the phasing harness and whatever. So the pluses and minuses are much lighter, lower wind load, but much more complicated, more loss, a little bit less efficiency with the Yagi approach on 902 compared to a 6-foot dish. The rough rule of thumb that I've used in the past is that above 1,000 megs, usually a dish is more appropriate than Yagis. Below 1,000 megs, Yagis are usually more appropriate than a dish. Some of the disadvantages, let me drop, of Yagis above 1,000 megs is that droplets of water on the tips of the elements can drastically detune the Yagi-like elements above 1,000 megs. They get so small, and the drops of water are so big by comparison. So on a rainy day, you have very poor reception. Loop Yagis get around this because the drops of water go around the loops and by gravity go down to the bottom, so to speak, and that's where the voltage knoll is concerned, is located. And so loop Yagis on frequencies above 1,000 megs seem to work pretty well. But it takes a lot of them. You have the resources to do both. You also have the resources to calculate how many decibels of gain the 6-foot dish is going to give you at each of those frequencies, and how many Yagi elements, whether you do it as a small number of very long Yagis or a large number of short Yagis. You have the ability to calculate how many Yagis are going to give you approximately the same amount of gain, and how elaborate is the phasing harness that feeds them all, the power divider assembly. One of the advantages of the Yagi approach, and I've done this on 432, is that by putting relays into the phasing harness, you can create a zoom control. And therefore, you can feed one Yagi, one vertical string of four Yagis, or all 16 Yagis, if you choose 16 Yagis. And you've got a three-step process of gain zooming and pattern zooming. And I've used that a lot on 432, and it worked like a charm. It was an awful lot of fun to do. To try to do a zoom control with a dish, I've talked about methods of doing it. It's much more difficult, and I don't know of anyone who has done it yet. And we've had a number of discussions on the microwave reflector on various ways of trying to get a zoom control on a parabolic dish, a center-fed or prime-focus-fed. I presume your dish is prime-focus-fed. Yes, the wind load of the dish is going to be significant. If you're a terrestrial communicator, let me drop one more time. If terrestrial communication is your main desire, in other words, you're going to aim the signals at the horizon, usually you don't have an elevation control that has anywhere near enough capability to put the dish in a bird bath mode. Therefore, making sure the top of the tower is properly guided and there's a thick enough mast so it can take 100 mile an hour wind into a 6-foot dish. And let me think now. 100 mile an hour wind, I vaguely remember the number is something like 50 pounds per square foot. and we can calculate how many square feet. You know how much wind load it's going to be. You can calculate that. And is the mast strong enough, and is the top of the tower properly guided to take that? Many towers will give you a wind load rating